Worst case scenario.
Die Bestatterinnen.
Hello everybody, thanks for tuning in and welcome. This is Sarah and with me is Helena.
Hi.
And this is episode 11 of your favorite funeral podcast, Hearst Case Scenario, Die Bestatterin. We're back after quite a long summer break. Summer appears to be over, at least in Berlin. It's really cold and wet.
No, it's not cold. It's just wet. And wet is not bad.
Nature needs it.
Yeah, exactly.
Nature needs it. All right. We're happy to be back. We've been quite busy. We have not been on vacation at all. We've been working. We're organizing multiple funerals in multiple cities at the moment.
Yeah, actually, which is exciting.
It is exciting. And you'll definitely hear more about it in a later episode. But for today, we decided to ease ourselves and ease you back into topics surrounding death and grief and all of that with a thing that's not directly funeral related and not related to our work. We thought that today we were going to talk about our favorite movie deaths.
Death scene, yes. Yeah, we were thinking about that a lot, and there are a few movies that,
you have remarkable scenes.
Yes, and touch our souls. Yeah, yeah.
When I thought about it, I realized that there's two categories.
Yeah.
There's super sad movie deaths that just, like this morning, I looked some of them up and I genuinely sat and cried this morning uh-huh. while preparing for this podcast. So there's the super sad ones, and then there's movie deaths that are remarkable in any other way, because they're super gory, funny.
Oh, yes, whatever, I know what you mean.
There's other meaning to them.
Yeah, but I'm going more for the sad one. No, actually, I brought a movie that is not sad in a way. The movie scene in this movie that I brought today is not sad. It's beautiful.
Yeah, yeah. I actually think let's leave that for the.
I don't spoil it.
For the finale, though, right? Because I think that actually we both have the same favorite movie death scene.
Yes.
And we'll talk about that later on. This episode is, going to be full of spoilers of all kinds of movie deaths. So if you have not seen any movies since the 60s, you may not want to listen.
And if you're not dead now...
otherwise, maybe you want to chime in, you want to let us know what's your favorite death scene in a movie and why. You can let us know in the Keith FM Telegram chat or on Instagram at Hearst Case Scenario Podcast. Can't wait to hear. But have you brought more movies than just the one?
I was going in my inside movie videotheque, or what you call, my favorite movie, and I was struggling to find a movie with a great death scene. And so I went this morning actually through one genre that I completely forgot, and this is the genre that called lacrima movies. I'm Italian, and in
like
Italy,
tear movies.
Yes, translated mean tears movie. And it's interesting because I grew up with Western and tears movies and horror movies. And all these three genres, they have always someone that dies in it.
True.
Yeah. Always.
Yeah.
I mean, in lacrima movies is a genre that talk about children. So made in this around the 70s and describe the story of a child around 8, 9, always a child that can talk and think and have feeling, and so not a baby. And this child, for some reason, gets sick, like incurable sickness. And then all around this sickness, they build like a drama. For instance, one movie talk about this child that has two parents, like 70s, you know, like divorce and all this topic. social topic that, I mean, today we would never have problem with a divorce.
Yeah.
I guess, you know, we don't make a movie about that and let the child die. This one story. Little Carlo, I don't remember his name. Little Carlo has two parents and his parents are divorced. Going to divorce, like he feel in the house that something is very bad, that his parents doesn't love each other. He feel excluded from other children, of course,
yeah,
because he's the only one, and he tried to get his parents together. In the time he's doing that, he gets really sick, like I think leukemia or something, and at the end he's dying, and on his around his deathbed. The parents together. So I love this kind of movie.
It's a whole genre?
And it's a whole genre. It's very cheap genre. Although it's there are a lot of these movies. And don't ask me why this movie are a typical Italian movie. I don't know who invented this kind of movie. Why they are typical Italian. Like the giallo is also typical Italian. Like the mix of thriller and horror.
Yeah.
And so
and
I don't
Italo
know.
Italo westerns, like the spaghetti
westerns.
Yes.
And all these movies are maybe, as they were not only in the cinema, but they were in television every day. Like they were not special movies. Like the giallo was in television.
Italian movies lay it on pretty thick, right?
Don't know. I mean, what do you mean about pretty thick?
Like they exaggerate stuff. They dramatize,
No, maybe it's a cliche. Italian are always dramatize things more than other people in the world. I don't know, but what I can only say is like these movies are great. Britain, also if they are cheesy, maybe.
Yeah,
but
like one of the movies on my list could totally be one of those.
Can I go?
Movies.
I want
you to. It's an American movie, but. You know, My Girl? Do you remember that movie with Macaulay Culkin when he was like really small? And I don't remember the girl actor now, but it was like they were small children and they were friends. And I don't even remember all the details, but I remember that he got stung by bees. I think he like a beehive fell on him. He fell in a beehive or something.
I know.
And then he dies and then the girl is sitting on the open casket. And
yeah. And he looks very swollen.
Yeah.
He was swollen from the. I remember this movie.
Yeah. That's like, that made me think of that. And that is definitely a movie on my list of like the super sad movie deaths.
Why? Yeah. I remember that he got stung from the bees and he looks swollen. Swollen.
Swollen, yeah.
Swollen in the casket. And I remember I had to laugh, actually.
Yeah, but you're a little bit older than I am. I saw that movie when I was like six, maybe.
Yeah.
And to me, that was for a long time just the saddest movie ever.
No, I can imagine that. As like, I remember only the swollen faces, and I thought, wow, how details this, and keep me away from laughing, from crying, sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry, but yes, maybe because I'm older. But yes, and I have a list of Lacrima movies. I like to read the title. The famous one is Il Venditore. Vate. I'm searching for that. You can keep talking.
Okay. So. Yeah, so My Girl, I think in my childhood was one of the two like super, super sad movie deaths that really broke me. The other one is a very iconic one. I bet if you Google saddest movie death of all time, that one will show up on top of a lot of lists. And it is Walt Disney's Bambi. And Bambi's mom dies.
Oh no, Bambi!
How sad is that? Like I watched that this morning and I cried a little bit. It is so sad when Bambi searches for his mom and can't find
her.
And then he meets his father and he's like, "Your mother can't be with you anymore." That just breaks you.
I remember. No, I wait a second. Let's go over the scene. Bambi and his mother are in the snow.
Yeah, she shows him fresh grass.
Fresh grass. And then you hear, like, and Bambi is trying, and the snow is falling on him, and it's very sweet. And then suddenly you hear the gunfire.
Now the mom hears the hunter. The mom looks up, looks around, hears the hunter, and says, and tells Bambi to run back to the bushes.
With her together.
With her. And then they start running. And then the mom's like, Bambi, keep running. Don't look back. Don't look back. And Bambi keeps running. And then you hear a gunshot. But Bambi keeps running, keeps running, keeps running. At some point, reaches the bushes. And is like, we made it, Mama. We made it. And turns around. And the mom's gone. And then he goes and searches for her. And it starts snowing heavily. And he can't find her. And then he runs into like this majestic stag that's his father.
And he doesn't know that it's his father, right? Is it not like that he doesn't know? But it doesn't matter. But
yeah, maybe. Because I think the father says, your mother can't be with you anymore. Come with me, son. Or something. That might be, you know, the revelation. Mm. I don't remember if Bambi before knew that was his father. But yeah, it's this... Yeah, it's so sad. It's
Bambi, so sad. I think you can say it's life before Bambi and after Bambi. Like my life you're right. The first movie that I really cried and I understood it, something is happening and it's very sad. Death is not something you wish.
Yeah.
Was through another movie it was about animals too, but there was like a leopard with his babies somewhere in Africa, and then fire comes out and then he's trying to save his babies, but they die. And the second one, it was a television movie, not important, but the second one was Bambi.
Yeah.
And I remember coming home, because first you thought it's a nice movie about a little animal and in the wood, and then it was so sad. And I didn't expect that. Not even my parents did expect that. And we went to the movie to watch it. And I remember I came back and I was sobbing. And I told my mother, this is awful. Bambi's mommy died.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, what a grave topic to address in a children's movie. Like, present them with the reality that at some point their mother won't be able to be with them anymore. Like, that, I bet a lot of children learned about death through this movie.
Yeah, maybe, I don't know. Questions. Because the tradition kept on moving in my life. Like my son, when he was, I think, 3 or 4, he loved to watch Bambi. So like we had a videotape and a video of VHS, and so he loved to watch it. And he always was waiting for the scene when the mother died. And he cried a lot, but he liked it in a way. Also not that sounds like he hated me, but no, he was always expecting this scene to find himself crying a lot.
Yeah, because it gives you can explore these feelings through that, right? The movie is kind of a catalyst, and he knows that the scene is going to be over. He knows every second of the scene, but he can like indulge in those feelings and feel them out, so to speak.
But he was watching this movie like... if he had the possibility, he would watch the movie all over again, 24 hours a day.
Okay, and that is a little bit weird.
It's very weird. And then his little friend came, and she didn't watch, she didn't know the movie. And I told her, like, okay, it's sad. No, Konrad, my son, say, it's a very sad movie. It's a very, very sad movie. And she said, okay, let's watch it. And then I was listening to them talking, and I knew now is the scene of the mother dying. And then I hear my son saying, you know, and now soon the mom is going to be dead. And it's going to be very, very, very sad. And then you hear like, bang, bang. And then they were like this. And so, I don't know, he liked this moment. No, not that he liked this moment. He loved this movie. And I think this was his first approach, as you say. It was something very sad in a childish way. Put it in a childish way.
I think there's
way.
Also in I now don't know the English title of that movie. Is it A Land Before Our Time? Is it the same as the German title? That dinosaur
animated movie
from the 80s?
It's not from the 80s, it's from the 90s.
Is it?
Yeah.
Early 90s, yeah. Really early 90s.
Yeah, but Konrad was alive and he was 5, so it was 97.
I was not 15 when that movie came out, no.
Ein Land before unsere Zeit.
Ja.
Mit Dinosauriern.
With Littlefoot.
Littlefoot,
yeah.
Genau.
Because
yeah.
Littlefoot's mom dies too in that
yeah,
movie.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. Littlefoot's yeah, yeah. mama died
but
too.
But I'm actually going to Google.
But
because I think that movie is older than 19.
Yeah, maybe you're right. 90. But yeah, okay. Maybe because my son was watching that and I thought it's something very new. And I didn't care
88.
About... 88. Really? So yeah. old? Yeah. So, oh, okay. I didn't know that. So I didn't know. Littlefoot mom died.
Yeah, that also has a sad, like the kid has to go on without the mom scene.
Yeah, and she appears sometimes, right? The mom?
Kind of guiding him or something? Mm. Yeah, yeah.
Like God or something.
Yeah, or he sees like trees that look like her.
I don't know, but the voice of the mom is inside too, if I don't remember. If I don't remember wrong, she talks to him like maybe in a dream or something like that.
From beyond the grave.
But you know what I watched yesterday searching for a good dad scene? As It.
Oh, I've not seen that.
Okay. It, the second movie, no? It's It, the first one, the old one, and yeah. then It, the second one. Yeah. And I didn't like that movie. Because I loved It, the first one, because it's so old. It doesn't have special effect. No, it's more like a psychological internal about fears and children and the clown and all this. Yeah, some mystic atmosphere. Yeah. And then the second one is more like action, action, action. And they are grow up, the children, right? And they meet It again. Mm-hmm. And the dying scene is amazing. Did you see it? Did
no,
you watch
no,
it?
Are I
you
have not, I have
okay.
No.
I thought maybe, as like you see this awful clown in form of a big spider with, he's so mean and he has big teeth that the mouth always open up and is about to eat them. He's huge in the second episode. I don't know what's happened there, like somewhere in the caves under the earth. So don't remember that. Anyway, and then they run, they are full of blood, they are so in fear anyway. Everything happening, like fear, 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 we want to escape, we don't know where to go, and it is behind them, and suddenly one turn around and say, we are not afraid of you anymore. And this is the beginning of dying of it.
Ah, so the clown dies or the monster.
The monster died in the moment where they say, we're not afraid of you anymore. And then he becomes to shrink.
Oh,
he starts
yeah.
To shrink. And then there are five people, I think. And then, so the first say that. The second say, you're just a tiny, stupid clown. And then he shrink again. And he becomes less as a monster as he was. Mm-hmm. So less. And at the end, he's a little baby. And he goes like, please keep me with you or something like that. Don't let me. They keep saying, you're just a stupid clown, stupid clown. And then they put one of them, put the hand in the chest, take the heart of him out.
Okay.
And they
smash it.
They
like
smash it.
Squeeze it.
And then he die.
Okay.
So like fear makes things big.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can kill them if you make them small again. And
yeah.
it's a kind. The movie was not so good for me, but the scene is very symbolic for a lot of things.
Yeah.
Like if you don't see death as such a bad, bad, awful things, you are not afraid of it. And it doesn't seem so horrifying.
Yeah. Okay, I have to think about that. And I've never felt the. I'm not sure if I've, except for Stand By Me, which is about finding a corpse, I guess. I'm not sure if I've ever seen. Oh no, I have another Stephen King, on my list actually, in the super sad movie Deaths. Can you guess which one? Which is the saddest Stephen King related movie death?
Oh God, I'm so stupid. I don't know.
Green Mile.
What's happened?
John Coffey. Have you read The Green Mile
no.
or seen the
no,
movie?
No, I just read one book of Stephen King and it's not that.
Okay, so The Green Mile is about this like kind of simpleton, very big, very strong person of color, man named John Coffey, who's on death row.
Yeah.
And I don't even remember the details now, but he's kind of a weird mystical healer person, and what's his name? Tom Hanks plays the prison guard who has like kidney stones, and John Coffey heals him from that because he can like take out sickness out of your body and then breathe it out through his mouth as like a weird swarm of flies or whatever. So he's like this magical healer person, but he's still, and he killed someone in self-defense. Like, he's not really guilty of murder.
People of color that is.
Yes, but he's, yeah, but he's there the on the Green person. Mile, which is death row.
Mm.
And when they kill, before they kill him, like he calls the Tom Hanks character boss, I think. And he, there's this heartbreaking scene where he's like, don't put me in the dark, because he's super afraid of the dark. And it's this giant, super strong, super soft and lovely dude that they then put on the electric chair, and like, he begs them to not put him in the dark. And that's also, I remember that I cried for like an hour after.
I think, I know, I don't remember that scene so hard. Now that you're talking, of course, I come to Dead Man Walking, to the Another Dead, which is a great movie also. Yeah. And I, there I cry so much.
Death Row movies are so horrible. I was actually...
No, they are great if they're made right.
Yeah, but they hit so like,
and that Dead Man Walking, did you see that? Like,
I have seen that, but ages ago.
Well, it's like the old drama built up very slow. Like, Sean Penn is sitting in a cell for that, as of for that in death row, and he's talking all the time with his nun, played from Susan Sarandon.
Oh, yeah, right.
And so they are talking about guilt. He has to confess that he did something, and it's all about that. And he's, of course, at the beginning totally against her, then they become very good friends, and then he's so afraid of dying of the moment.
Yeah.
And he's begging her to be there while how is he dying? With a lethal injection, I think.
Yeah.
So, and then it's this mirror, like, they can, I don't remember, maybe... they're watching each other in the eyes. Like, he needs her to be, to don't be too afraid. And then it's this.
And to witness him as a person, at his end as a person, I think. I think that's very significant, too, that there's actually someone that has seen him as a human being and not just as, like, a criminal.
Exactly.
Before, and is then there to witness and his death.
Yeah, and it's all this topic of forgiveness, of course, and because she's a nun. But. And then it's this scene, actually, where he walk to the room where he's actually going to die. And he's wearing this white shoe, pantoffel.
Like a house shoe.
White house shoe.
Slippers.
And orange suit and guards. And I was so kind of horrified to see that still in this moment they are in chain.
Mm-hmm.
So it's totally, how do you say, like, humiliating what they're doing. And then it's this scene how he walks towards this room with his slippers, and he's so afraid.
Yeah.
And there I cried so much. That was like before he died, actually. Like, it's the pre-dying scene. There was...
death penalty to me is a topic that, it goes under my skin, and I think it's really hard for me to watch movies like this and to read about it, because it's so, like, the idea that, like, the state has that power over you and there can be a ruling and then you'll be killed, you know? When I was in the States, I was in the Texas, the Huntsville Prison Museum, and they have, like, the original... old electric chair there, and that was, that creeped me out so much to see that.
I know that, what I was like during the research yesterday and a few days ago about death and good death scene, I came through videos that they are really horrifying. For instance, like it's called Darknet.
Mm-hmm,
I'm very stupid in it, but then, and they don't show everything. But do you remember, what I wanted to say, do you remember was this period of time that people show in the internet how people were
beheaded. Yes.
And I never watched it. I couldn't watch it.
I can't watch
a real a death scene that is violent and it is real. I can watch a movie, but I can't watch a real death violent scene. I can't.
Yeah, I can. The thing with me is, if it's in a movie and it's completely fictional, then I have no problem whatsoever. If it's in a movie and it's about something real, then I have to like intentionally focus on the production and on the acting. Like, I have to look at the actors and be like, okay, look at him now. I wonder what he felt in this scene to take
you
it
can
away from the reality.
If you,
like,
yeah,
I have a really hard time like watching war or anti-war movies. Whenever violence or death is shown and it's super realistic, then I have...
Like in The Deer Hunter. Do you remember The Deer Hunter?
No.
The Russian Roulette, the Vietnam movie with Robert De Niro. And there are three friends going to Vietnam and for the war.
Yeah.
And there are three best friends, I think. Three or four, I think. And they get prison. They become prisoners,
okay,
of the Viet Cong, and they do. They are in a cage in the water, very bad, and they're scared. And one is wounded, but they are friends, and so. And then they get. They play with them Russian roulette,
mm-hmm,
because so with the bullet in the pistol, and it's so horrifying.
So
it's
intense.
It's so horrifying. So and as all the time this pistol goes around, and you think, okay, please don't make me watch him dying now.
Yeah.
It's so intense. And so this was one movie that really shocked me. And it was not only about the war, but about the fact that you can die so violently.
Yeah.
And you have to do it. So it's awful. And I wanted to talk about another death scene that impressed me is Love Story.
Love Story?
I mean, Love Story is I'm so oldie, but Love Story, it's this beautiful movie with Ryan O'Neill, and they are together, they're young, and then she gets also a sickness, and
mm-hmm,
then she discovers that. And so, and then there's this long goodbye scene at the bed. Do you know this scene?
No, but on my list is Leaving Las Vegas, and that's a little bit like that.
And Dance in the Dark with Björk.
Oh yeah, I have not seen that.
You cry. Like, I thought all the water of my body was,
yeah, okay,
went out of me.
Yeah, it was like that. It was Leaving Las Vegas. I don't know if that movie aged well, because it's also, it's like from the 90s. But then I thought that was like the saddest movie of all times, you know, when like Nick Cage goes to Las Vegas to drink himself to death, and he hires this prostitute to spend his last hours and days,
yeah,
with him, and then they fall in love, and like the last scene is like they have sex, and then they fall asleep together, and then when she wakes up on his lying on his chest, he has died.
Oh,
it's,
yeah,
so sad.
I don't know. No, I watched this movie again, and I mean, yeah, it's maybe not aging perfectly, but it's a good movie.
Yeah. But I think there's also movie deaths that are like not, of course, there are a lot that are not sad at all, you know, but I think there are some that are like impressive in other ways. Some are funny. I don't know. One other one that I had to think of also has Susan Sarandon in it. It's Thelma and Louise, of course.
Oh,
like the,
yes,
iconic,
yeah,
scene where they drive it over,
oh,
the edge of the Grand Canyon.
Yes, you're right. I completely forgot this movie. They changed my life, as in terms of friendship.
Yeah.
As they made my friendship very strong when I watched this movie. I understood what friendship can be, how,
yeah,
strong can,
yeah,
friendship be.
It's a great movie. Did you know that inspired Copycats? Like, after that movie came out, a bunch of people killed themselves by driving over the edge of the Grand Canyon.
No, I didn't know that, but... yes, why not? If you can choose between, like, I don't know, hanging yourself in the cellar or driving with the car over the Grand Canyon, then,
yeah,
I would prefer to do that, I guess. I don't know. I didn't know that. But I think a lot of movies make people copy something,
yeah,
right?
Definitely.
So, and but also that, what is this movie with Meryl Streep and Goldie Hawn? Das, der Tod steht ja gut. Death kommt.
Death wears Prada?
No. Death. Oh no.
The Devil Wears Prada.
No, this is.
I got those mixed up.
No, also this is. No, let's keep talking and then I will come up with the title.
Yeah. But another thing that I thought about is how, like, The Godfather has a lot of interesting deaths.
The Godfather is a good death in the field.
Yeah, I think one of the most iconic scenes in movie history, I'm going to say, is the scene where Sonny Corleone dies, like where he gets set up by his brother-in-law and he's on his way to beat him up and then he gets stopped at the turnpike. And then all those dudes come up with the machine guns, with the Thompson guns. So that scene is super iconic, but I think way more interesting, especially looking at how violent this movie is how the actual Godfather actually died.
That's so beautiful. He dies in the field of sunflowers.
Yeah, he dies in his garden playing with his grandson. With his grandson.
And just, like the old bad people, they just fall to sleep and die or something. Yeah. Yeah, it's true.
I thought that was way more satisfying than, like, had he been killed in some mobster way, you know?
Like, you mean Bonnie and Clyde?
Yeah.
They were also killed in a shower of bullet.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
And what about good scenes?
Good scenes. Okay, so one of my absolute, absolute favorite ones, and yeah, like, I don't know, maybe like the most iconic death soliloquy, I guess, in movie history is from one of my favorite movies of all time, too, and I'm just gonna quote it now. I've seen things you people wouldn't believe. Attack ships on the fire off the shoulder of Orion. I watched sea beams glitter in the dark near the Tannhauser Gate. All those moments will be lost in time, like tears in rain. Time to die.
Time to die?
Yeah, that's how the quote ends. No, that is
okay.
That's but Roy Batty, that's Blade Runner.
Well, I wanted to say it's Blade Runner.
I almost say
Rambo, but I knew that it's not Rambo because it's Blade Runner. Yes, of course.
And I think that is such an iconic thing too, because he's a replicant, right? So he's not human. And in this monologue, I think all this kind of comes together, you know, because also then like this white dove flies up and it's super symbolic. And he has just saved Deckard from falling off that roof in like a last act of mercy, knowing that he'll die anyway. And it's so human, but he's a robot. But then he's aware of his own experience and his feelings that he has. And to me, that just everything that this movie is comes together in that scene. I think it's brilliant. I think it's really brilliant. And part of it was just changed by Rutger Hauer, too, because he shortened it a bit. And I think it's one of my favorite movie scenes of all time.
Yeah. Now I can tell you my favorite scene of it's my favorite good scene that make me thinking I will copy that for my work somehow or try to use this media for us. Also in
now you're coming to what is
also
both of our number one.
I told you already. Of course. I just give you some direction. We are in New York in the year of 2022. So it's the future.
It already happened.
But back then was the future because the movie was made long before that. It was made in 73. And so in New York, how many people are living there? 40 million people are living in that movie in 2022, in the future. And it's just the city's overpopulated. There are no places anymore for people. And food is becoming very, very it's a serious problem to mm-hmm. get food. Mm-hmm. Only rich people are having flats, and and everyone else is poor. Very few bunch of people are rich, and they have beautiful flats, and they can have also a concubine that live with them.
Yeah, women are practically furniture. Yeah, in that movie.
But for these women was a reason to survive, yeah. Or else they didn't have any other choice except being poor and starve. And the food there is Soylent Red, Soylent Yellow, and Soylent Green, which is the title of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And Soylent Green is the new food that everyone else want to have because it tastes better than Soylent Red and Soylent Yellow. And it's just like chips in the color of green. Our hero in the movie is the bad, awful Charlton Heston.
Charlton Heston. Yeah.
Mr. Gun
from my dead
lobby.
Cold hands.
Yeah, Mr. Lobby and for guns, and so we don't like him as a person. But in this movie, he's great, and so he discovered basically that in Soylent Green, like this new food, it's women flesh. It's not only women, it's people. Human.
Yeah.
I say not women. Human. People. It's made out of people flesh, and now about the death scene, which is great. It's a place that you
so
can
beautiful.
You can register and you can offer your body for Soylent Green, by the way. It's like a
euthanasia machine.
Yeah. And his best friend of Charlton Heston goes there to kill himself. To kill himself. And they make you like dying in the most beautiful way.
It's like a pod, right? You go into this
you
pod.
You go to a kind of room with, actually it's a 3D cinema.
Yeah.
It's a Cinemax. They put you on a bed and they cover you, they make you comfortable, and then you're alone in this big room with a planetarium with a round roof, and they project on this roof all the most beautiful images that you experience in your life. Everything what is happiness. And Saul was living before the earth became so bad, so he knew the power of nature, animals, running water, everything what is beautiful in nature. So he's lying there with this fluid in his vein, I guess. So he was injected, I don't remember anymore. But yes, he knows that this will be the last pictures that he is going to see in his life because he knows that he's going to die.
And he's lying there and he's super happy.
And he got, it's like the best trip you could ever have.
Yeah.
And I think, and make me thinking, we can use this idea. I would like to steal this idea and help people that they're actually dying for real in the hospice, for instance. People, they can't walk anymore. They can't talk anymore. To put them the VR glasses.
Yeah,
actually, I bought one, and I want to offer that to people.
Yeah, it's a thing that we've been talking about. That might be a thing that's actually.
When my father was lying and dying, I knew that his biggest desire was to go to Sicily and watch the sea for the last time.
Yeah.
And we brought some pictures, but it was like too difficult for him. And I, after watching Soylent Green, I thought, remembering Soylent Green, I know that I'm a funeral director, I thought, man, we can use that. We can use this idea and give people really the possibility to be there.
Yeah.
Also if it's fake reality, whatever, but yeah, it's like better than a picture.
Yeah, like not the assisted suicide part of that. You can hear all about what we think about assisted suicide in the episode that we made about that. Look on Spotify where you can find all our episodes. But to adapt the part that's the virtual reality bringing joy and
yeah, it's not about
destruction.
No, exactly.
To
exactly
people.
Having an experience, because life and death in a dying time can be miserable.
Yeah,
it's like you're just lying there and watch the roof. And so why? Maybe the invention of these glasses could be a relief for these people.
Yeah.
What do you think, Sarah?
I think that's a good idea. I think we should talk to people, ideally talk to people that are dying about that. Because I could also imagine that if you're on like heavy opioid pain medications, that stuff like that will just make you nauseous because your brain can't really process
you
it,
think?
You know?
I don't
but,
know.
But in general, I think it's a very, very good idea, because in end-of-life care, a thing that is very important is to create
a virtual reality.
To create beautiful things around, a beautiful surrounding, because that can make people calmer and make things easier for them. Like if you're bedridden and you can't really move even, then people like hang up pictures maybe or paintings in the room within eyesight of the person, or put the flowers somewhere high up so they can see it, you know. So if you are very limited in what you can see from your deathbed, that could open up a whole new world. I think it's a very good idea, and I think we should experiment with that. And
maybe we should talk to a brain.
Is this someone who works in palliative care? This is for us to workshop. But
This is what I want. So,
but yeah,
so
I think
we have the same movie that described the best death scene in a way like that is not sad but beautiful. Yeah.
Even though it has that aspect where Saul goes to, it has that old people know that they are too much now and they could be more useful by being turned into soil and green even. So he goes and kills himself. That's like one of the things that people hold against ideas of like legalizing assisted suicide, you know, that it would put old people in a position where they have to decide whether or not they're more useful to society.
I know, but now you're going too far. I'm just talking about...
Yeah, I'm not talking about what we take from that. I'm just talking about... I think we cannot look at that movie scene without acknowledging that that's a part of death is depicted in that movie. I was taking this back
from
what we want to do.
But if you watch the movie, which I really recommend, that you will see that it's exactly what we are not supporting. But... it's inspiring. It's very inspiring. I could feel like Saul lying in this bed and thinking, if that is the last moment of my life, then it's okay.
Yeah.
So maybe Death Row could use that for his patient.
But
maybe it doesn't matter.
I mean, Death Row shouldn't exist.
By the way, Death Row shouldn't exist, of course. Okay, but I don't know. Yeah, death row shouldn't exist. Of course not. Or maybe for, shortly before you go to sleep during the narcose.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah, I think it's a great idea. And I think we should explore that.
Dentists should have it.
Dentists should definitely have it.
Because this is impossible. Dentists, they always promise hypnosis and doesn't hurt and blah, blah, blah. It's always hurt and the hypnosis never work.
Yep.
So maybe this kind of virtual reality could help.
Learn from Soylent Green.
Yeah.
All right. We've been talking about death in movies for 45 minutes now, I think.
Ciao.
I think we should maybe wrap this up. I have so many more on my list. I have the Indiana Jones. I have Spock sacrificing himself in Star Trek to the Wrath of Khan. There are so many other movie deaths I could talk about.
I came up with the movie Death Becomes Air. Her. This is the title of the movie.
Yeah, all right.
With Meryl Streep and Goldie Hawn, which is nice. They're falling down the stairs at the end of the movie and they break in thousands of pieces. And they,
their
heads are like shaking still on the footpath, and they just talk to each other, and this is the end of them. It's very good movie. It's a funny movie, but why not? Death can be funny sometimes.
And I also have Frozen, Jack Nicholson in The Shining.
And what about this? Jemand flog über das Kuckucksnest.
One flew over the cuckoo's nest. I have not seen that movie.
No, it's very nice.
Okay, so you see, we have plenty of more movie deaths. Maybe we'll make a second one on that. If you tell us all your favorite movie deaths, we'll check them out.
Yes.
And then make a ranking.
Yeah, and then maybe we can make a festival someday. And show all the...
Just a supercut of all the movie deaths.
Genau, exactly. A marathon of death movies festival.
All right.
Movie about death festival.
I like that idea. We really hope you enjoyed this episode, and we hope that it's not too loud in the background because our studio situation has changed a bit.
We are more people here.
But yeah, we'll be back in 2 weeks. Thanks for bearing with over our summer break.
Don't take any Soylent Red and Soylent Yellow and Soylent Green.
Yeah, remember, Soylent Green is people.
Don't do it.
Bye-bye.
Ciao.